There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Jono Alderson, Head of Insight at Linkdex. Jono, tell us a bit about you and about what you do at Linkdex.
Sure. So I've got a background in agency SEO and analytics, which are obviously very closely related. And I came, brought them together and established a team at 26 in Leeds, a large internet marketing agency, and the largest one in the north. No one's ever heard of, bizarrely. And grew up a team focusing on how SEO overlapped with analytics, and very strongly focused on technical SEO and process and working with big organizations. So I came to Linkdex to bring some of that thinking and experience to help them shape their insights team, which is a bit of R&D and a bit of product development, and really taking that understanding of how enterprise and big business SEO and analytics works and all the politics that comes with that to help shape our offering in the form of the product itself, and obviously bits of consultancy and general steering on how to best be effective in that work and how to support people who are trying to fight through getting things done and getting projects launched and measuring success for their efforts. It's obviously incredibly challenging at the kind of scales of large companies and competitive markets that we look at.
Yeah, I mean, today's focus is SEO and performance beyond a domain. I'd like to talk first about the difference, if you like, sort of how is enterprise SEO, you know, sort of SEO, which deals with large brands, different to, quote, normal SEO?
Sure. So certainly my experience from having made that transition from starting off with an agency, which initially was quite small and dealing with SMEs and the smaller end of the high street brands, going right up to dealing with FTSE 100 clients and some of the biggest brands on the planet, there is a definite distinction. And that's that when you're working on the smaller brands, they tend to be quite inwardly focused. They tend to be a little bit myopic in their view. And the view of SEO realistically is, here is us, here is our site, and here are our competitors and who's winning. And it's quite a binary view. It's, are we winning or aren't we winning? And it's about who's ranking where for which keyword and whose domain outranks whose domain. There's maybe some areas where they get a bit more sophisticated and there's a blog, there's some integration with other marketing channels. But generally speaking, the focus tends to be us versus them. I think the key difference I find at looking at enterprise SEO is that you start to enter the space where you're working with brands rather than just companies. And it's an interesting distinction. And it's quite hard to pin down exactly what it means, but I love this idea that the difference is that a brand has to think about and earn equity, and that everything that they do has to represent them well and has knock-on effects in other channels and influences the way that people, their consumers and the wider audience perceive them. So it's, you've got to think about that from an SEO perspective. Is actually what you're trying to influence is, how well is this brand perceived? How well does this brand perform when a user searches for them? And that's a slightly different premise to, where do we rank for this keyword? So it becomes bigger. You've got to take into account things like reputation and mind share and all these kinds of angles. So the problem with this historically is the rest of the advertising and marketing world knows this and they understand it intrinsically because they've grown up in it. And we've crashed the scene and said, look at our highly measurable channel and look at all the great all the great things we can do and all the metrics it affects, and then been utterly dismissive of things like reputation and even typically fluffier things like column inches and those kinds of softer metrics. We've been incredibly dismissive of them because we've struggled to tie them back to our world and our way of thinking. And as SEO matures and increasingly the big brands, the Coca-Colas of the world and the Disneys of the world, are starting to understand SEO, sure, they're on page and their technical stuff isn't great and they're a bit behind, but they're starting to think about how can we affect the experience that people have when they search for our brand. And the way they're approaching it in many ways is much more mature and sophisticated than the way we're still all fighting over who ranks where for which domain. So it's about thinking bigger and starting to treat SEO as something more than just rankings and traffic. Sure, that's still important because that's the mechanic for who wins and who loses and who comes out on top, but it's much wider than that as well.
Okay, so it sounds quite intricate, the sort of differences and the relationships. What does it mean in practical terms?
Sure, so it's much more than being about where you rank and how you rank, and it's much more about the whole search experience. So there's the challenge we come up against quite often is, let's say you've gone through the process of optimizing your site, you're getting into the habit of creating content that people like and share and care about, etc., and you're ticking all the boxes and you rank highly for, or you or your domain ranks highly for the keywords that you're interested in. The problem that then starts coming up is, what happens if the guy in second place or in third place, or even if we're ranking in third, what happens about the guy ahead of us? What happens if their content is negative about our brand or our product?
Mm.
And that sure as hell influences whether people click your result and whether they buy with you and whether they shop with you. And you've got to control that as well. Suddenly, it's not enough just to outrank people. You've got to make sure that your brand is well represented in that content. And that's really the ethos. I mean, I, as an example, recently bought a new TV, and I probably searched on two or three different devices over the period of a couple of different days. I must have opened 20 or 30 tabs, read probably twice that many reviews, hopped back and forth a bit between them. And ultimately, the TV I bought, I think it was a Samsung or LG or something, I never visited their website.
Yeah.
And actually, if you are a brand and you're in that position, again, so many of the SEO industry will look at their corporate kind of brochureware sites and laugh scornfully at them because they haven't optimized their sitemaps and sorted out their link building strategies. But actually, it's because that's not what SEO means to them. What SEO means to them is that whole experience that I just went through positively represented the brand and ultimately defined which TV I went for. I think I saw one fairly early through the research process that had a 3-star review, and I instantly dismissed that from my consideration set. Now, if that brand had, say, positively influenced content elsewhere, or promoted other stuff, or advertised in a different way, or had, say, display advertising on a site with a different view, there's all these tools that they can deploy which affect the way in which I experience their brand as a result of searching. And this goes well beyond what we conventionally perceive as SEO, but it goes, in other ways, right back to the heart of it, is I am somebody typing something in, looking for a solution. Everything that happens from that point determines who I spend my money with. And why wouldn't we want to influence that and control it and start to manage that ecosystem a bit, rather than just looking at how well is my very, very small slice of that pie performing?
I'm glad I'm not the only one that has about 25 tabs open at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the way we behave now, isn't it? It's just, yeah. Why would you only look at one piece of content? Why would you ever believe what the brand says? Why would you ever have faith in a 5-star review that says 50,000 people have said it's great in capital letters? You know, you validate your research. And then even beyond this, you end up with the influence of the social space and peer review. And all of this is search. And all of this is what happens when people search. So you've got to have your eyes on all of it. And ultimately, because if you don't, all it takes is for a competitor or a comparator for them to have their eyeballs on it. And if they are, say, engaging with the blogosphere and manipulating who's advertising where and mitigating negative content, then it doesn't take a lot for them to quite quietly just displace you, and you'd never know about it. Mm. This is the kind of thing that nobody thinks about managing the entire ecosystem. So what happens if somebody else is doing it? You don't even see that your market share is getting eroded. You just gradually lose sales. Scary.
A lot of our listeners are quite small businesses, and this whole notion of the sort of SEO influence outside of your own site, you know, seems to be really gaining pace and becoming more important recently. I'm just interested in strategies. What strategies? I mean, we talked about practicalities, but yep. What strategies can sort of perhaps the smaller businesses, well, and the medium ones, look at to sort of leverage this for maximum benefit?
Well, it's something we've been playing with a lot as an idea and trying to work out practically how it works. The biggest challenge is you only know about what you can see and monitor and measure. So you've got to put an awful lot of work in up front, understanding how people search, how they behave, what the experiences are. And some of that is traditional keyword research. Some of it might be surveying and panel groups. Some of it might be eye tracking. It varies, but ultimately you need a comprehensive understanding of that entire journey. From our side, a big part of that is really understanding the keyword universe. So making sure that you are tracking and monitoring huge volumes of keywords, because people search in so many different ways. We had a great example recently. We were looking at the car insurance industry, which typically is perceived as being incredibly competitive and saturated. And it took us about 20 minutes, I think, having previously researched the entire market. So we'd gathered hundreds of thousands of keywords, and we had a client who was looking at competing on young people's car insurance. And the maths said that it didn't make sense to go after that because there was only a finite amount of opportunity. Whereas actually, when you're looking at so many more keywords, you can see that, well, some people spell it wrong, some people pluralize it, some people use slightly different language. And actually, yeah. There was about 10 times as much search volume and interest as they thought there was for this one keyword. So you've got to stop thinking about where do we rank for this keyword and how much search volume is it and which should we optimize for, and start thinking about user behaviors. And the keywords are what maps that out, but you've got to have your eyeball on all of that. So we're working with sites who've moved from tracking 600 or 700 keywords, even some really huge brands who, if you think about the size of, say, the entire insurance industry, there are sure as hell more than 600 different ways that people type what they want into Google. So we've moved from there to upwards of, say, 30,000 or 40,000 keywords, which is a huge volume. But it allows them to quite easily dip in and spot tactical opportunities. So This first step of making sure that you map out the entire industry and have eyeballs on which keywords are used, where are they ranking, how much search traffic is there, and where's the opportunity, is definitely the benchmark for that. And it's incredibly powerful.
We recently did a show actually on localization. I'm just wondering how much that affects all this keyword research. Because if you've got people, I mean, if your brand is multinational,
yeah,
I'm presuming that localization has effects. I mean, you know, someone in America might search for, I don't know, car trunk boxes as opposed to boot boxes.
Enormously. Exactly. So you get into this. There's two really interesting things happen there. There's one, you get into language analysis, which is something I'm working very hard on at the moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We may release a tool at some point, but we are prototyping infrastructure that analyzes keyword usage and categorizes it. So we can say, for example, that's a really great example. We can say that car trunk is the same as car boot, which is to do with cars and automobiles, which, if we look at another set of factors, might be related to insurance, might be related to travel, and we can start to group and categorize those keywords. And what we can do then is say, right, we've got this 30,000 foot view where we can see all of these keywords and all of the opportunity, but actually we can dive right down and say, here is a subset of people who are looking for cars with large boots to do car rental at an airport, and they are price sensitive and they are at this stage of the buying cycle. And there might be 20 keywords there, and there might only be a couple of thousand searches a month. But if you can quite quickly spot where in those spaces there's limited competition or weak content, it's not a huge amount of effort to set up a process where your content guys develop something that fills a gap and you do a bit of outreach around it. And you can quite strategically just set up workflows to capitalize on all these little niches. And obviously that adds up quite a lot over time. And because nobody's thinking at this level of scale particularly, there's so many of these little opportunities, again, around the young driver's car insurance. I think the example we spotted is the site ranking in second had a page on young driver's car insurance that didn't have any links and didn't have any shares, and it had about 200 words. So the only people who are winning in these kinds of micro niche spaces are the kind of people who are just there. Nobody's proactively owning it. So it's all the opportunity in the world to be had. And the other side of this is if we're moving beyond just looking at rankings and keywords and saying, actually, hold on, the experience of the searcher matters, and the experience of the searcher on other people's sites and other people's content matters, then the other thing you've really got to have eyeballs on is a way of measuring that sentiment. So that's, again, something else that we're looking at quite heavily at the moment is, how do you say, if I search for car insurance, in that search result, what's positive, what's negative, are they predisposed towards or against my brand, are they positive or negative against competitors? Are they male? Are they female? Are they a blogger? Is it a forum? And starting to say, okay, we know that there are X thousand people searching for this product with these kinds of behaviors, and this percentage are negative, this percentage are positive. And then you can start tactically acting on that. So you can say, actually, what we want to do is find the really, really positive people who aren't ranking really well, because we can partner with them and we can promote them. Or we want to find the negative people. In fact, one of the most powerful things is we want to find the neutral people who are quite popular and doing really well, and we want to make friends with them. So you've got these two ideas playing together. Is one is have this eyeball over everything and make sure that you can categorize all of it and spot the opportunities. And the other half is find out of that what's good and bad. And then you've just got a process of, let's tackle the biggest issue and the biggest opportunity. And that becomes a day-to-day thing. You know, you turn up, you look at either the biggest negative threat or the biggest positive opportunity, and you start cracking on with content and outreach. It becomes a nice framework.
It really is a way of thinking, isn't it? These sort of kinds of strategy. You've got to get your thinking right. What are the challenges on executing this type of thought process?
It's the same challenges that conventional SEO and the SEO of now has, is that even where we are today and where most people are trying to push SEO forwards to, is a space that most businesses and organizations aren't set up to deal with. So the biggest challenge of that is departmentalization and siloing. So any established business that's been around for longer than SEO has, which, let's face it, is most of them, certainly anything older than a decade or so, will typically have a marketing team, a call center, a suite of managers, et cetera, et cetera. And when you try and say, okay, what we need to do, guys, is start becoming a publisher, which means that we need the PR guys to be able to be friends with the marketing guys. We need to talk to the product guys, because it turns out nobody actually knows enough about what we sell to be able to talk about it in any depth. Mm. We need the legal guys to be able to sign it off. We need the CEO to buy into the vision. We're suddenly introducing this requirement, which has to permeate every aspect of the business.
Yeah.
And change ways of thinking and change behaviors in a way that doesn't give an immediate tangible reward, in the same way that changing staffing operations in a call center might, for example. So you're asking upfront for huge organizational change and changes in ways of thinking as well as acting. So it's incredibly hard work to get that across. And one of the big pitfalls that seems to occur is that when you do finally get buy-in, the organization will say, okay, we'll test this in some small way. We'll set up a small working group and we'll try a few bits of sample content. And they might write two or three blog posts, and obviously it achieves nothing. It falls flat on its face, because this is a process and a way of working that needs to build up equity over time. So you find even the people who aspire to do it well, it's still too big of a risk and too big a change. Smaller businesses have a great opportunity because they've got less infrastructure, less overhead, less entrenched thinking. You can be a bit more dynamic and disruptive, so you can take the chance to shake things up a bit. And that's absolutely what we're seeing in the space at the moment, is you've got this real war between the established giants who have a phenomenal amount of brand equity, which gives them, it opens doors for them, it gives them buy-in from established publications, it gives them better relationships, but they struggle to do, and they struggle to talk about anything interesting other than themselves. And then you've got the agile little guys who are fighting to be heard, but what they've got to say is really, really interesting. And it presents this really fascinating mix in the search results. I suspect, and we've certainly heard from Google, that they have this keen focus on the concept of brands. And I wonder what their plans are to mitigate against this disparity, where actually the big guys are the guys you should probably shop with because they're validated that they are authorities, etc. But they don't say anything. They don't have anything interesting to say because they operationally can't. I mean, I've worked with big brands and spent years trying to find out enough about the product to be able to write something genuinely interesting about it. And that nobody's, the marketing guys we've worked with haven't known who to ask in the organization. Oh, we don't know who knows about the product. Oh, great. That's how on earth do you become a publisher then? So absolutely terrifying. So yeah, you've got this whole challenge of departmentalization and cross-team, cross-disciplines. There's no way of dealing that with that other than to get the buy-in and make it happen. There's no magic recipe for changing organizations overnight. The part that bolts onto that, which is more of a practical challenge, is that when you're thinking at this scale, you're not talking about our website or the website. You're talking about 20 different websites, 6 different blogs, 3 campaign sites that somebody's forgotten about. We're working with a client at the moment who has, they think, tens of thousands of domains, but doesn't have any idea what or where or how to find out. What do you do with an SEO in that position? Where do you start changing keywords and page titles when you've got 40,000 websites? So there's a huge amount of education around rethinking about how do we deal with different platforms, how do we deal with the underlying technologies, how do we prioritize content strategies. Often there's a lot of investigation just to get to the bottom of what does our digital ecosystem look like, and then you've got to apply this model of prioritization across all these different territories. And then the other bit you tend to find is that actually these brands tend to have child brands or be part of an umbrella company. So you've got hierarchies of politics there as well. And actually, do you start at the little campaign site? The only advice I can give is find the bit you can manipulate and show some results on that. And that might be the blog that nobody reads, or it might be the campaign site from the product that was taken off the shelves a year ago. But you can find your way in and start to wriggle around and make a bit of impact. But it's certainly not a process that that changes overnight. So yeah, organizations, funny.
The ever-shifting landscape of search and the ever-shifting landscape of what we do to try and do well in it. Yep. But it's interesting, actually, you mentioned about large organizations and the importance of different groups talking to each other. It seems to be I guess it was always important, but it seems to be becoming even more important in SEO these days, isn't it?
Yeah, and rightly so. If I search for something on the internet, I want to find the quote-unquote brand who is passionate, enthusiastic, an expert, cares about quality, has good customer service. And if historically you've got two types of people in that space, you've got the people who are that and are already doing it, and as a result of doing that are publishing, are consumer centric and are doing a great job. And you've got the people who aren't, who have been historically handing over a lump sum of cash to agencies and third parties month on month on month to try and get them to build up that footprint. And I think for the searcher, it's certainly a good thing that the people who really live it and breathe it do it. If companies aren't there and aren't being consumer-centric and aren't answering questions and fulfilling needs and shaping themselves to what the consumers are searching for, it's increasingly difficult to outsource that, to manipulate it, to do it in small ways. I think that's really great. It makes everybody's life very hard, because the reality is not all companies behave like that. An awful lot of companies are set up around having to sell things, having business models that are based on tight margins, who can't afford necessarily to have a huge customer service experience. Businesses who are outright designed not to. Things like, it's a dirty sector, but the cash loans industry is really interesting, that they're not even remotely interested in reputation and customer feedback. And actually their business model, it prohibits it based on the margins and the overheads. So
yeah,
it's a really hard game to play. But if you want to win, you've got to show that you care, and you've got to show that you're good at what you do. And for better or worse, the medium that we do that with is words on a page.
Well, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure that our listeners will find those insights useful. How can our listeners find out more about you and more about LinkDex?
www.linkdex.com is our website. You can get in touch with us there. We do monthly mini conference events as well. I think the next one's in September. We're taking a bit of break over summer. But if you sign up on the website, you can get access to videos from previous ones, etc. We're on Twitter. There's loads of really great thought leadership there. I'm at John O'Alderson on Twitter. I tend not to be very great at social, but I do say the odd occasionally interesting thing, hopefully. So feel free to get in touch there. But thank you very much for having me, and it's been very interesting.
It's been an absolute pleasure. So thanks for listening, everyone. Sitevisibility.com/IM podcast, as always, is a place to go to find us on the web. If you've got questions, then send them to podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. If you want to ask a question audially, is that a word? Then phone +44 1273 256 150. And of course, you'll find us on iTunes, and we love reviews and ratings on iTunes. So it's goodbye from me, Andy White, and it's goodbye from Jono.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.